Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Hello, Buckeye fans, and welcome to a Cotton Bowl episode of the Bucknuts Happy Hour here from, what's our hotel called, Steve?
The Westin Irving, Texas Convention Center location. Really neat area here. They've got some bars and restaurants just near here. The Toyota Music Center is just south of here as well. Kind of a probably a 4,000 or 5,000 seat music venue, you know, for some concerts and comedy shows and whatever. It's kind of a neat thing, and everything's quiet here because the convention business kind of goes dead over the holidays. The convention center is over our shoulder here behind us, this big building, and there's nobody over there because they don't do conventions during the holidays. But this was a perfect place for the bowl to put us up. We're about 20 minutes west to the stadium and about 15 minutes east to the airport, so it all works out good.
Yeah, easy peasy. They shuttle us around, and we get where we need to go. Again, this is the Bucknuts Happy Hour. I'm Patrick Murphy. This is Steve Hellwagon. We are here in Dallas for the game, which will take place tomorrow. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. You may notice we have this Missouri Tigers logo behind us. That will be the Buckeyes' opponent in the Cotton Bowl. Steve, we talked about this last week, but the level of interest for you, for the fan base, everybody, since it was announced to now the day before the game, how much do you think that's changed?
Well, I think that now that we know that so many of Ohio State's draft eligible players are going to be playing in this game, I think that that has really kind of upped the intensity level, I guess, a little bit, or the anticipation level, probably more accurate. When you tell people that you're going to get to see Emeka Egbuka, JT Tuimoloau.
Yeah, don't know that for sure.
Travion Henderson definitely is playing. So when you add those stars back into this game, which were not definites, you know, when this thing was announced, when they didn't get the help that they needed to get into the college football playoff on Championship Saturday, there was a lot of trepidation that they're going to go play in a consolation bowl. Well, yeah. The neat thing about Ohio State, we were talking about this, they've made the playoff five times in the last 9 years. And the other four times they've won their bowl game, which was Notre Dame in 2015. Yep. Let's see, USC here in 2017. And then
Washington, Utah.
Washington and Utah in the two Rose Bowls. And the last time that they were in a non-championship game, playoff or BCS championship was Clemson in the Orange Bowl after the 2013 season. They lost that game. So they've done pretty well in these consolation bowls. And everything you heard from Ohio State the entire month from anybody that they made available was how seriously they were taking this, how important this was. Today, Ryan Day and Eli Drinkwitz had their final press conference over at the stadium. And he was asked, do you view this as a chance to get some young guys opportunity to play? And he said, number one, we're going back here to tomorrow. Pat asked this question. Number one, we are going to try and win the game. Yep. So that is taking precedence over getting seasoning for CJ Hicks or whoever else. Insert name of promising young player who's never played at Ohio State that you want. Now, some guys in this category are going to play out of necessity, and that's Carnell Tate, that's Brandon Ennis, and that is most certainly Devin Brown. But as I've said in any story I've written, the lightly used Devin Brown,
that's a good way to put it.
He should be fresh, other than the fact he did get hurt. He got folded up, you know, on that run at the goal line by Penn State, but theoretically, he's healthy now and going to give it his best shot.
Yeah, I asked Devin because there were pictures from Ohio State put out and pictures throughout this week. He's still having that ankle pretty heavily taped. I asked him about it. He said it's just precautionary, good to go. So if we're taking Devin at his word, he should be able to be mobile. He should be able to, do all the things he needs to do. I forgot to do the most important thing here. We do have a beer on that. Well, we have a Truly. So the hospitality suite here, they have bottles and then they have Trulys, and they weren't opening the Trulys. So I was able to sneak one out here.
Do they have liquor in there? I didn't notice.
No liquor. Okay. We will have liquor tonight at our media party, but we'll get to that at the end. We'll talk about kind of our fun activities we've had and what we've got. We'll finish the show with that before we close things out.
I'm just drinking water because I had a couple beers last night.
Steve will get back on the train later. But you touched on Devin Brown. We had a question here or a suggestion from Ball Game 2021. Devin Brown's stat prediction for tomorrow. I think that's tough to say. I mean, like, we
depends
seen Devin,
how the game's going. I sure. mean, if they're behind, they're going to need him to throw the football. And I would think he probably throws the ball 30 times.
Yeah.
And I would think he probably completes 19 or 20, 17, 19, somewhere in that range would be a good percentage, almost 2/3. 65% is pretty good. And then 220 yards, probably 2 touchdowns and 1 interception, just as a guess. I think Missouri's really good with takeaways. I can tell you that. They are 9th or 10th in the country in turnover margin at +9 for the season. And they have a defensive back, Chris something hyphenated Abrams,
yeah,
who has 4 interceptions himself this year. He's a corner. So, it's going to be, we don't know how much Cade Stover is going to get to play in this game because he seems like he's banged up a little bit. And it is what it is. But I look for Brown to do pretty well. And if he runs for 30 or 40 yards on top of that, that's a pretty good day, you know.
Yeah.
Get another 130, 40 yards rushing out of Henderson and Hayden. You're now over 400 yards for the game. And that's, in the right realm, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's tough to kind of predict what Devin Brown's going to look like just because we haven't seen so much of him. We've heard a lot of things. We've seen little bits. We saw him during fall camp. I think he's a different player than he was when he was out there in fall camp competing with Kyle McCord. But when we saw him in the games this year, it was for, those red zone packages, or it was when the game was pretty much in hand for the most part. So we haven't gotten to see this version of Devin Brown who's going to play from the start. I think – if you're going to make predictions, your numbers probably make a lot of sense there. I do think you talked to him for – they kind of broke up Devin Brown's interview time in 2 different rooms. Mm-hmm. You talked to him in one. I talked to him in the other. Like, he does – and the word that keeps getting brought up, and I agree with this, is charisma. And I do think that is something that not to take shots at Kyle McCord here, that's not what we're trying to do, but that he just was a different personality. And I do get the sense that these guys maybe gravitate a little bit more towards Devin Brown's personality and just kind of the fired up nature of him. I've been really impressed with how he's handled this stuff since Kyle McCord transferred. What have you made of the times we've gotten to speak with him?
Yeah, I agree 100%. He brings some moxie, some spunk, some energy, some excitement to the game. And again, I'm not going to disparage Kyle McCord. I think Kyle McCord was a pretty good Ohio State Buckeye, you know, on the whole. People can vilify him all they want. You know, I feel in a lot of ways he was scapegoated for a lot of the shortcomings of the people around him as much as anything else. But, yeah, I like what I've seen and heard from Devin Brown. Everybody close to the situation seems to indicate that he's been practicing pretty well. Coach Day basically said he's had a – I don't know if he used the word great, but he said either used the word great or very good week of practice. Mm-hmm. I think he said he's had a great week of practice. And that would indicate to you that he is preparing in the right way for this challenge. So, you know, this is a tough one. I mean, you're going in into a stadium. It's not a home stadium, obviously, for either team. Support probably going to be down the middle, 50-50, you would think. Missouri will probably have a lot of people who traveled to come to this game. Ohio State probably have support from Ohio people who live here in Texas, I would think. I don't think a lot of people from Ohio probably traveled down here for this consolation game. But, you know, it's going to be a tough environment. It's going to be a noisy environment. And, you know, is he going to hyperventilate under the heavy lights? You know, I mean, what's it going to be like for him? And he says, I've been playing tackle football since I was 7 years old. He says, I've just got to go out and play like I know that I'm capable. And I think that's a tremendous way to approach this, because you can't make it a bigger deal than it is, but you can't underestimate what it's going to be either. And I think that Missouri is a top 10 team for a reason. They won 10 games. They beat their share of teams. The only two teams that they didn't beat were LSU and Georgia, two teams that people, you know, thought were pretty good. So, you know, there's a lot there. And with Missouri, this is a program that hasn't had a winning season in 5 years.
Right.
They've been right around 500. And, so having beaten a top 10 team in 10 years, back to 2013, they went on the road and beat Georgia.
Imagine if you're Ohio State. I mean, I understand we're talking about two very different programs, but, like, that's absurd to think about.
And, yeah.
You know, Missouri is not the football blue blood of Ohio State.
Well, that's how it was at Michigan for a while until Harbaugh finally got some wins under his belt. I mean, going back, you had to go back a decade to find where they'd beaten anybody who was any good, because they were down for such a long period of time there with the Rich Rod and the Hoke years, et cetera. But that'd be akin to. And, you know, so this is like Missouri's, you know, we say it all the time, this is Missouri's Super Bowl. Well, you know, go back this season, it was Rutgers Super Bowl. It was, you know, Michigan State was eliminated from a bowl game. That was their Super Bowl. You know, I mean, it was up and down the line. You know, every time Ohio State gets everybody's best shot. And this would be the biggest win for Coach Eli Drinkwitz, no question, if he's able.
Who just a few years ago was at Appalachian State.
Yeah.
Which is just quite the trajectory.
Doug Shepard says Ohio State reported that they sold less than two-thirds of their allotment. They were given 13,000 tickets, according to a spokesperson there, Jerry Emig. And so that means they sold between 9,000 and 10,000, probably in that range. So that'll just tell you that, you know, if you wanted a ticket to this game, you could find them. And I think on the secondary market right now, it's like a $50 ticket, mm-hmm. which face value is probably 150. So some people have made investments in tickets and, you know, need to get out of that investment. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the crowd breakdown is. As I said last week, I expect Ohio State fans to show up, whether they bought the tickets through Ohio State or not. As you said, 50-50, you know, maybe it's a little bit in favor of Missouri in terms of the breakdown, just because of what you were talking about and how big of a deal this game is. But I still think Ohio State fans that live in the area or are not able to watch the team in person as often as people that live in Ohio are going to show up to this game. And that probably will come more from the secondary market. But before we get off Devin Brown, you touched on his potential rushing numbers there. This is a different dynamic that we haven't really seen. And he's not, you know, He's not going to beat you with juke moves and whatnot, but he's an effective runner. They haven't had a guy who was able or willing to do this type of rushing since Justin Fields. And I don't want to compare them because I don't think that's a fair comparison. But how much do you think that that is something that this offense can use or needs when they haven't? You know, we saw C.J. Stroud do it against Georgia, but Kyle McCord really didn't do it much at all. How much does that change what they can do when they have a quarterback who's not only able but willing to run?
Yeah, I think that that can't be understated, because when it's third and seven, and we see it in these bowl games all the time, and the quarterback starts to roll out and he's got nothing but green grass in front of him, you know, a lot of these guys are able to tuck it and go get that first down. And what does that really mean? It means you're sustaining drives and you're holding on to the football and so many positive things. You're flipping field position eventually because you're able to sustain a drive. So to me, I, you know, Ohio State hasn't had that kind of mobile quarterback in a few years. I mean, Stroud just under penalty of death would not run, and McCord just was not wired as a runner either. So, yeah, to me, I think that Brown does bring that that extra added benefit. And also when you're down on the goal line as well, you can do a lot of different things with that goal line package that that he was installed for. So, yeah. So it was all good.
We've got the veteran Tim May,
the legendary Tim May,
popping up behind here. He's on the phone, or else he'd pop in and say hello.
I had a question for Tim May when he gets off the phone.
Yeah, we'll bring him over if he walks back by. Let's talk about the rest of this offense. We are 99.9% sure that Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't going to play. Ryan Day still wouldn't confirm it today. Brian Hartline yesterday was jokingly asked, how do you know he's not going to play? We've been to practice. He's not practicing. We know how this is going to go. There's a better chance that our friend Kevin Noon tonight eats 150 pickle chips. You can find that over at Good Buckeye Lord. Huddle. That's going to be a spectacle than if Marvin plays. So other than that, Cade Stover said he's going to play. He may not play as much as he usually does. It sounds like we get to see some of the younger or less experienced tight ends play a little bit more. What do you expect from this offense? Obviously, Marv was the focal point all year. You've gotten time for guys like Emeka and Travion to get healthy. Emeka, will be the top dog at wide receiver. I assume you'll get some Dallin Hayden as well. How do you kind of see this offense looking here a month on from what we saw against Michigan? And a different quarterback.
Yeah, I think you got to keep it simple in the first quarter. I don't think you go out there and try and change the world or overwhelm Missouri with all the bells and whistles. I think that you start out trying to establish the run, and that's obviously something they had a difficult issue with against Michigan. Henderson only ended up with 60 or 70 yards, whatever it was.
They had that one drive where they really ran it down.
Yeah, with Trey Onum had some success, and obviously he's not here.
Nope.
So it's Henderson and it is Dallin Hayden who are the guys that are going to be in the mix for this game. And you know, I want to see those guys get opportunities and make some things happen running the football, because that's going to make life so much easier for Devin Brown. And hit, you know, if it's second and three, you got the entire playbook that you can use. If it's second and nine or second and 11, I mean, you've now told the defense what's coming. I mean, you know, you've got to drop back and try and complete a pass, so and they can turn up the heat on you. So, I'm interested to see what it looks like. I think, it'll be a one-off. I think, obviously, you know, they're going to play to his strengths and what he can do. And to me, it doesn't make any sense to try and reinvent the wheel or do something outrageous in this game. I think you play to your strengths and you play the strengths of the people that you have.
Yeah.
And I just think they're going to keep it simple for Devin Brown and you know, give him some options. If Cade Stover can't play, that really does kind of hurt the offense a little bit, because one, he's a great blocker, but two, great pass catcher, has been so involved in the offense all season long. Does that open it up for G. Scott or Jelani Thurman or somebody else at that tight end position to get some work? Receivers, I'm interested to see what that rotation really does look like. Does Jaden Ballard finally get, you know, in his, what, third or fourth year, finally get a chance to play some? I mean,
meaningful snaps.
If he doesn't get to play in this game, you just wonder, would he ever play at Ohio State? I don't know. But, yeah, everyone's talking about Tate Nennis and Xavier Johnson. You know, he deserves some snaps as well. But, yeah, I'm very much interested to see which of those young receivers get some run in this game.
To me, with the receiver group, this is a chance, and like you said, wide receiver, or Ryan Day said that they were going to first try and win the game, but you've recruited so well at that position, you should be able to open up the rotation, especially in a game like this that, look, if you don't get it going offensively and you don't win the game, it's not the end of the world. I would like to see what Jaden Ballard can offer. I would like to see more of Carnell Tate. I'd like to see Brandon Innes some in the slot. We know what Emeka Egbuka is, and have him in there when you need him for sure. Same with Xavier Johnson in his last game. But these are guys that were really highly recruited and really talented, and Brian Hartline has talked very positively about all of them. So I would certainly like to see some more of those guys get an opportunity to kind of kickstart their career, similar to what we saw with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka a couple years ago in the Rose Bowl. Now, obviously, that was because of multiple opt-outs, but I think there's an opportunity for those guys. You mentioned Jelani Thurman. That's a guy that Denzel Burke, who may be the most honest player I've ever spoken to in terms of, you know, giving you we promoted you guys for tonight. The Buckeye Huddle guys just walked by, so we wanted to let them know about noon situation. But Denzel Burke tells it like it is, and he was asked about Jelani Thurman, and he'd said that he still thinks he has some work to do to kind of get to what they need in terms of being a tight end that can contribute regularly. But it doesn't mean you couldn't use him some in a game like this, especially if Cade Stover is not going to play a ton. The offensive line, Ryan Day was asked about the progression of that this year. We've talked about it a lot. I think they've made progress. I think it's a better group than it was week one.
Definitely better than it was. You know, he was only sacked once. The quarterback was only sacked once by Michigan. But the pressure was pretty constant, and I think it did impact McCord's play in that game. Sure. And obviously he got hit on that last play where – Donovan Jackson tripped over a teammate's leg,
Carson Hinsman's
leg, and fell down and allowed the rusher to come up right through and hit the quarterback. And, you know, the final, you know, whether they go on and score or not, we'll never know, had that interception not happened. But they were definitely going to be down about the 20-yard line, you know, looking at, you know, 3-4 cracks to win the game. Right there at the end with a touchdown and an extra point, they would have won the game 31-30. How incredible would that have been?
Yeah, think about where, I mean,
changed so many people's lives, the trajectory of so many people's lives.
We're
would
in
have changed.
Or we're in Pasadena.
We're in Texas. Yeah, we'd then, be in California right now.
Yep,
so.
And Kyle McCord would still be the quarterback, and the Buckeyes would probably be the favorites to win the national championship.
Yep.
Crazy
that
one
player. They would have gone in probably as the one seed. Yep. So, you know, so many things happen, and it's just, you know, it's unfortunate. It's Ohio State has been in this position, similar position, for a lot of these years where just one or two plays changes the trajectory of the whole season. And, you know, it, other than 2014, where they broke through and won the national championship in recent vintage, it hasn't worked out for them. But, you know, I think Ryan Day, when this game is over and he has plenty of time, you know, after this game is over to retrace all the steps and think about what was good and what wasn't. I think that there is a tendency in our culture, you know, and with this, you know, I call it fan base, whatever, at Ohio State, that, you know, this wasn't good. This wasn't good. Special teams certainly wasn't all that great. That the first thing they need to do is rip this up and rip that up and rip this up. And I think Ryan Day has to kind of weigh that. What does he truly need to rip up? And what just needs a little bit of a refinement so that they can get it to the next level to where they can take advantage? I mean, and the whole paradigm, the whole landscape shifts next year where you don't have to be 12-0 to make this playoff. You can be 10-2 and probably still get into the playoff if you're Ohio State. A 10-2 Ohio State is going to get into the playoff ahead of, you know, a 10-2 Missouri or a 10-2 Colorado, or, you know, I use that one. That one, the Dion Star Factor, ESPN will use their one wild card on Colorado if it comes. And I'm joking about that ESPN is involved with the selections. A lot of people, the poor Florida State people, blame poor Kirk Herbstreit and ESPN for keeping them out of the playoff. And it's like, you know, we were talking about this in the car the other day. I feel so bad for those people, particularly the coach and those players, because my God, you go 12-0, you did everything, or 13-0, you did everything that was set out in front of you that you were supposed to do, and you were not rewarded properly for it. And yet, I do not begrudge what the committee did one bit, because if you put them in the playoff and they lose 40-10, what was served? You know, because, you know, they were miserably awful against Louisville and they won the game.
Yeah.
You know, that's not one of the top four teams in the country, I'm sorry to say. But, you know, next year they'd certainly be in the playoff with that record. In fact, they would have been a top four seed automatically as a conference champion, because I think the top four or five conference champions will be given that 1-4.
Yep.
So, which is funny, because like next year, you know, it could be USC is 10-2, and Ohio State's 11-1, and maybe I'm just throwing this out there, they play each other, and, you know, then USC wins and they get in the playoff and they're 11-2 and they get a higher seed. You know what I mean? There could be upsets in these conference championship games that put teams that maybe aren't top four in those bye weeks. So yeah, it's going to be real interesting the way it all works out.
Yeah. Let's look over on the defensive side of the ball. I think that's probably the most interesting matchup here for Ohio State, because Missouri certainly has some weapons, quarterback, wide receiver, running back. We don't know about Tommy Eichenberg. The first day we were out at practice, he was out doing drills. The next day he was dressed but not doing drills. He obviously was banged up, didn't play the two out of the last three games, played against Michigan with that arm injury. We've seen what Ohio State's defense looks like without him. Cody Simon steps in and plays there. So we know what that would look like if Tommy's not there. It would be a shame, because this is the last game of his college career, and obviously he'd like to be out there. What do you think is the biggest matchup issue for Ohio State? Is it Luther Burden? Is it Cody Schrader, the running back? Is it quarterback Brady Cook? Where do you see the biggest issue for the Buckeyes defensively?
I think, first of all, you got to get pressure on Brady Cook. He is a guy who will keep plays alive. He is a very willing runner with the football in his hands. I watched the Georgia game, and he converted a number of third downs with his running ability. So I think that you've got to have contain and pressure on him. That means don't let him escape the pocket to the outside and see all that green grass and the first down marker and go run to it, because, again, that's going to sustain drives for them. So that's one. Cody Schrader, I watched him, and you watch him on television and you say, this guy isn't the most imposing running back. This isn't Barry Sanders or somebody who's just going to wow you with moves and whatever. He's just the most consistent 6-7 yards a carry guy that you'll ever come across. And occasionally he will spark a big one, but his big ones, you know, are not going to get out the gate. Typically, you know, you might track him down after 25 or 30 yards, but he is an outstanding running back, 1400 yards on the season. He was first team all SEC, leading rusher in the SEC, which says a lot for how physical that conference is. For somebody to have 1400 yards is pretty impressive. And then Burden, to me, Ohio State's well equipped there. I mean, they have a full house of outstanding corners with Burke, Igbenosin, Hancock, and Jermaine Matthews. You got four guys across there who will all probably take turns matching up with him. But I would think Burke will be on him quite a bit and take it as a personal challenge to try and hold Luther Burden down. And Coach Drinkwitz talked about today how Burden is a guy who was highly rated, who took the path less traveled, and instead of going to Alabama or you know, Georgia.
Ohio State was recruiting him.
Ohio State, wherever. He went to Missouri, and, you know, he's really made a great name for himself in the Missouri annals. And he was obviously a All-American caliber player and all SEC, Biletnikoff semifinalist, et cetera. So, to me, I think Ohio State's well equipped for that matchup. That's not to say that Luther Burden, you know, at the end of the night could have seven catches for 100 yards, but if it's the right 100 yards and it's not a touchdown and it's not, you know, he gets 20 on third and 25, that's fine. He can have that, right. You know. So that's kind of how I view it, that the quarterback to me is the catalyst. A guy throws for 3,000 yards, that gets your attention pretty quickly. That tells you this guy was good in game one, he was good in game two, he was good in game three, he was good in all 12 games that they played. So he's very consistent, and you know, I enjoyed watching him play. They've got an outstanding offense, and I think that they are going to test Ohio State's defense on all three levels, and it's going to be a fun game. I think it really will be.
Yeah. I think the secondary will be interesting. I think, you know, they move Luther Burden around quite a bit, but more often than not, he is in the slot, which I imagine will be a test for Jordan Hancock, player who, despite only really playing one season, did play some last year, but was hurt, is considering leaving after this game. I would be a little bit surprised if he doesn't come back for another year, but he spoke when we were talked to him in Columbus about, you know, he has a decision to make, and you go out and have a really good game against a guy like Luther Burden, that'll grab some attention from NFL personnel. So we'll see how that works out. Obviously, still no Lathan Ransom either. I forgot to mention him earlier. You're going to have Sonny Styles back at the deeper safety position most of the game. Josh Proctor's final game, he was a guy we talked to this week. And, you know, after 6 years of up and downs, a lot of downs, not as many ups, he finally became the player that they thought he could be this season. So, you know, they want to send him out on a positive note. The one thing that's really stood out to me, Steve, is the fact that so many of these defensive guys have declared that they are playing in this game and want to kind of make amends for what happened in that Michigan game. I think a number of them are probably leaning on coming back. I think we'll find that out shortly after this game. But the fact that they want to go out and, you know, end this season on the right note, you've got that opportunity because of the things you were talking about with the personnel on the other side of the ball. I think that speaks a lot about this team and kind of what they want to accomplish, especially after having a defense that struggled so much 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, they've come so far in such a short period of time. And I think that they see the opportunity, obviously, to finish the season off on a high note here. And I think that, you know, we'll see as they get into it, you know, tomorrow night. We'll have a good feeling early on if they're able to contain the quarterback and not let him convert third downs, able to limit what Schrader can do running the football. You know, don't give him 5-6 yards on first down. Keep, you know, and by and large, Ohio State was really good against the run this year. It was really just the second half of the Michigan game was the one glaring time, I think, all season long where they just got gashed and didn't have an answer. So, you know, I want to see how that front six rebounds and plays in this game and, you know, hope for the health of as many of those guys as possible. You got Cody Simon lined up and ready to go.
He'll be back next year.
Yeah, he's coming back. If Eichenberg can't play, then Cody Simon probably would be there. So, you know, we'll see. I'm wide open on it. I think that, again, until we get into the game and see what the matchups really materialize, it's kind of hard to predict what you're going to see out of Ohio State. We don't know what they've practiced all month. You know, 3 weeks they've had since they found out that Kyle McCord wasn't going to play. So, you know, now we'll see what Devin Brown has for him.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. How do you feel like just, you know, we'll have score predictions on the site over on Bucknuts tomorrow, but how do you feel like this game plays out? What does it look like if you're kind of putting a blueprint out there for people before they tune in?
Yeah, well, Missouri, I mean, They played Georgia, number one Georgia, on the road at Georgia, which has got to be about as tough a situation as you could possibly have in college football. So they've been in tough spots and played against the very, very best in the sport and, you know, gave them a tough game. It was 30-21, I think, was the final score. And I just think that, you know, for me or anybody to assume, oh, they're going to be overwhelmed by what they see from Ohio State, I don't think you can say that. I think that, you know, Missouri is an outstanding team in their own right. And I think that they're going to give Ohio State a tough challenge here tomorrow. And this game means the world to them, obviously. So Ohio State's got to match that. They have to match that intensity, that desire, and that determination. Because I do believe Missouri is going to play like a team with its, you know, hair on fire tomorrow. And Ohio State, you know, just can't show up and say we're Ohio State. And at the same time, I'm like, you know, this is a game Ohio State, you know, as we said, since 2015, they've won all these non-playoff bowl games. And I just think that this is the next one. And I think that, you know, they've played and beaten some pretty good teams, you know, along the way. I mean, that USC team was supposed to be really good. Ohio State beat them 24-7 in that game. Notre Dame was supposed to be really good. They beat them like 46-28 or some screwball score like that. So, yeah, it was. I mean, I'm not going to say those were easy wins. Certainly the two Rose Bowls were not easy. Ohio State had a big lead against Washington, almost frittered it away. And Utah, they were down two touchdowns most of the game and had to fight and scratch and claw to get back in it, you know, in the second half to win it on the field goal at the end. So, you know, to me, I just want to see Ohio State play like it's capable and put it all together. And obviously not having Marvin Harrison Jr. is a huge blow for them. I mean, that he was such a big piece of this offense. You could write him down for 6 and 120 and 1 or 2 and 6, 120 and 1.5 touchdowns every week. I mean, when you know you've got that in your hip pocket, and I mean, that just means the world. So yeah, I look at it that it's going to be a fun game. I think people will get excited about it tomorrow with the anticipation that you're going to get to see something fun tomorrow night. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Let's dive into a couple of the questions. We already answered some of them that we've had here. Mike Schaefer asked, are commits or Texas area prospects allowed to attend the game as Ohio State guests? I believe they have to just buy tickets like everyone else.
Yeah, they don't. There's no comp tickets for recruits at a bowl game. It's not a home game for either team. Maybe Ohio State can sell them tickets from their allotment so that they're in the Ohio State section. But otherwise, we have seen James Powers, who's from San Antonio, or James Peepers, yes, from San Antonio, came up and attended practice, was with Tony Alford yesterday. So
and he's going to the game. He got his mother bought him tickets for Christmas.
Oh, that's nice.
Is what I read somewhere. So he will be there. But yeah, I think all the rest of, if anyone else wants to attend, they attend just like a regular fan.
I gotta step out 1 second.
Go ahead. Bucky Hustle asks, any surprise players you guys think play? I don't know if they'll play a ton of guys that we haven't already talked about, because I do think that there is intent. Steve, there's an outlet right below us.
Oh, okay. Well, I got this.
He's plugging in his computer. But I do think that there is a real focus on winning this game. I think that there is the incentive to go out on a positive note. As we mentioned, they've done that multiple times in these non-playoff, non-BCS championship games. And I think it helps the offseason. I think you go into the offseason with a good vibe, and you know, you don't want to have that bitter taste in your mouth, even if it is kind of a meaningless game. And, you know, I don't think, you know, like last year, losing to Georgia was a motivational thing for Ohio State during the offseason. I don't think losing to Missouri has that kind of cachet. So I don't know if there'll be any surprise players that play. You could have some guys that have big games that maybe haven't before. We talked about some of those young receivers, you know, maybe a couple defensive guys, you know, if they rotate more on the defensive line or something along those lines. But I think it will be a lot of, you know, the main guys and, you know, with other guys kind of sprinkled in, you know, and receivers probably the most obvious place just because you're already down Marvin Harrison Jr. and Julian Fleming. So that's kind of my thought on that. Asking here, Rusty Jesse, hand it to Hayden, has been something fans have asked for this year. It only happened in one game. If he gets 10 total touches, will you be surprised? I don't know if I'd be surprised. I could see them rotating him and Travion decent amount. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I think he gets more than 10. I think you know, between catches and probably be around 15, I think, catches and carries together. I think Henderson will be between 15 and 20. You know, there's no reason to run Henderson in the ground here.
Right.
You know, to keep him fresh and to keep him producing for the fourth quarter, I think it makes sense to give Hayden some work in the second and third quarter, you know, to spell Travion a little bit. But, you know, again, it's so impossible to predict how a game is going to go. I mean, yeah. you just don't know until you get into it. I mean, they could go up 20 points. They could go down 20 points. You never know. I mean, so, you know, my inclination is, we're talking about how's it going to go. I just think Ohio State, the cream's going to rise to the top in the fourth quarter. And, you know, it may be a close game for three quarters. I'm predicting 31-23 is my score, but I'm open to discussion, I suppose. And again, in a lot of instances, just kind of feeling our way in the dark on this because you just don't know what the roles are going to look like. I mean, you think, but it's just, what is it really going to look like? So,
yep, it'll be interesting. Michael Wilson asks, will we see OSU hire new coaches or replace any coaches? Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about this on other shows. We won't go into it too much, and we'll have time to talk about this a lot after the game. But I would be very surprised if there is not at least one change on the staff. And, you know, I think you look at internally first, James Laurinaitis is a guy that they would love to have as a full-time assistant coach who can go out on the road and recruit. You know, he's essentially the linebackers coach at this point under Jim Knowles, but his title, because of the way things are with the NCAA rules, is he's a graduate assistant. So I would not be surprised if they make room for James Laurinaitis to move into a full-time role. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if there are a couple coaches that depart and new guys come in. I think that happens a lot of off seasons when things don't go perfectly the year before. So would not be surprised there, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about that after the game. Justin Eichinger said, if Brown plays bad, will Aaron Nolan be the starter next year? So much hype around him. There is quite a bit of hype. He's the number 6 quarterback in the 2024 recruiting class. I would be surprised, and you can weigh in on this too, if they go with a true freshman quarterback. Ryan Day has not done that. I think we talked about this a week or so ago. I think that the last true freshman to start the season was Art Schliester.
Yeah, 1978.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, you've had your Braxton Millers, guys like that who have come in and taken over the job, Terrell Pryor, but they haven't started the season. I think that while Aaron Nolan is talented, he still has a – oh, there's the man, Kevin Noon. We've had people talking about your endeavor tonight. And, yeah. What do we think? How many are you going to get?
150.
All right, he says it, 150. Kevin Noon says 150. I would be surprised if Aaron Nolan starts, especially given what they've got in Devin Brown and Lincoln Kienholz and the possibility of a transfer portal. What do you think? Think he could come in and win the job as a true freshman?
That is so hard to do, yeah. As we've seen. I mean, Braxton Miller and Terrell Pryor both, you know, played the balance of their freshman season, right. But neither one of them started from the beginning. And, you know, Ohio State's schedule next year does give you the chance to have a soft launch with Akron to open up and then a couple more rum-dums after that. So you know, they're playing the Michigan non-conference schedule next year. Somehow Michigan and Ohio State's schedules got reversed because Michigan's playing Texas. So that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it will be. Obviously, there's some trips, you know, Big Ten games that you've got to get through. But to start the season, Jeremy Chaney says, first time heading to a Buckeye Bowl game. Enjoy that. They're fun. I did not go to one until I started covering the team, but I think it's a good time. I think anyone who has been to them will tell you that. So enjoy that. Bobby McCormick asks, will TC Caffey get a carry? He was working as the third running back in practice this week. I do think if it came down to it, Xavier Johnson would probably get in the game, but they do like TC Caffey. That's a guy who could probably get a scholarship at you know, a MAC school or something, you know, maybe even a smaller Big Ten school. But you know, I think, you know, if it gets to a point in the game where they're up big, maybe they get him in there, but we'll see on that one. This was something I was going to ask Steve here at the end, but we'll do it now. Picks in the playoffs. How do you see the four-team field kind of breaking down here with Michigan, Alabama, and Texas, Washington?
Yeah, I did a show with Kevin and Tony earlier today, and I said I was leaning more toward Michigan to win that game. Alabama, other than the Auburn game, you take that one out, that was kind of a clunker. Their last five or six games, they were awesome. So, including beating Georgia pretty handily. The score may not have reflected it, but they were ahead, 10-13 points a good part of the second half of that game. So, yeah, I'm leaning Michigan. Those guys made a really good case for Alabama, just that this is a game that Alabama usually wins and Michigan usually loses. So, you know, we've seen in the playoffs the last 2 years, they've laid an egg. So have they, moved to a new place where they don't do that? So I don't know. But yeah. And the other one, I'd say Texas, but Penix is awfully good and he could put Washington on its back. That one could be like first team to 40 wins. And, like one of those crazy Oklahoma, Texas 55-45 stupid games.
Like the Pac-12 title this year. Washington, Oregon was a weird one.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I on a thing I did early in the year before the season, I was asked for a non-traditional team to win the national championship outside of the teams that have won it here recently. And I picked Texas. I thought maybe with Quinn Ewers, if he kind of came into his own, then they'd have a real shot. They, obviously have gotten better. They weren't Texas's back yet, but so I will stick with that pick. In the Michigan side of things, Michigan, Alabama, it's hard to pick against an Alabama coached by Nick Saban in the playoff because they usually win, like you were saying, in those situations. Michigan has been very good. I don't know if that offense will be able to move the ball as much as they'll need to. So it would not surprise me if you get a Texas-Alabama rematch from what year was that with Colt McCoy when he got hurt? Like
2010, yeah, 2011, yeah. Somewhere around there.
That would be my pick. And
Yakov in there asked if I went to the 1984 Rose Bowl. No, my first bowl game experience with Ohio State was in 1994. They played Alabama. That was the first game that I covered as editor of Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Replaced Mark Ray at the end of the 1994 regular season. And my first game on the job was January 1st, 1995 against Alabama. Alabama scored a touchdown in the last 3 minutes to win the game, like 24-17, something like that. Then I had the Tennessee one the next year with Peyton Manning. It poured down rain in Orlando for 48 hours leading into that game. I mean, the last time there was a rainstorm like that, Noah built himself an ark. I mean, I'm serious. That's how much it rained leading into that game. So those were the first two that I went to. And then the Rose Bowl was the 1997 Rose Bowl. The 96 season was my third one. And I've been at all of them ever since then. I don't know the exact number, but that's like almost 30 years with – there was, 2 years where they didn't go to a bowl, 99. They didn't go to a bowl. They were 6-6, didn't go to a bowl. And then, obviously, the year they were on probation in 2012, they didn't go to a bowl. So out of those 29 years that I've been doing this full time, this is the 27th year I've gone to a bowl. And then, obviously, they've had twice where they won a bowl game and then got to go on to the national championship game, the Alabama
14-20.
Yeah, 14-20.
Yeah.
Alabama was involved in both of them.
Yeah. And then real quick, Rusty Jesse asks, are the coaches recruiting from Texas this week or focused solely on the bowl? They cannot be out on the road recruiting right now. Yeah. It's a dead period after.
I think they can welcome prospects to come and.
Yeah, they can come watch practice and things like that, but they can't actively be out recruiting. They can always be on the phone, obviously, and I'm sure they've done that. And Will Starr, Steve, your guy here, let's go Browns. Big one tonight.
I know. I am going to walk over here to the Yard House. I went in there last night for a late night pizza, and they said that they will have the game on Amazon Prime tonight. Hey, Tim, come over here a second. Show Tim May here. There he is.
Let's wrap it up, boys.
On three, that's where you're at these days.
On three, Letterman Row.
A question I had for you, we both covered Joe Germain back in the 90s.
Yes, we did.
Did anybody have a thought to call Joe Germain about Devin Brown?
I did. I couldn't get a hold of him.
Couldn't get a hold of Joe Germain.
I think he was on some kind of vacation or sabbatical or something. You know, the reason Devin Brown didn't play for him his senior year in high school, of course, is because Joe got his job or got – the head coaching job at his alma mater in Arizona.
He would have had to move schools to go be with
Joe. Yeah, so he, you know, some people in Devin Brown's life decided that Corner Canyon High School, one of the powers of Utah, high school football, would be a great place for him to go.
Yeah.
And I asked Devin about it, you know, yesterday, and it's kind of like now you kind of roll into a situation where you haven't been there or you're not the starter. And people have to accept you, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of a similar situation now. But, yeah, Joe Germain, I've talked about Joe Germain about him several years ago when Devin committed to Ohio State. And, of course, I did a podcast with Devin before he ever showed up at Ohio State, just about the way he embraced the idea of the competition. I mean, that was a Ohio State quarterback room that had Quinn Ewers in it at that
time.
And he came here despite that. And he had been committed to USC, so I know there's more than you wanted. But
no, well,
I'm very impressed with this young man.
No doubt.
One of the main reasons is because his dad's a private pilot.
There you go. Well, 25 years ago this week, almost to the day, Joe would have started against Texas A&M in the 1999 Sugar Bowl, his only start in a bowl game. He definitely was the hero of the Rose Bowl the 2 years prior. And then they got thumped by Florida State.
Of course, there was the year before against Florida State when he went into that game.
And he got killed.
And then Joe Germain's dad came down out of the stands and wanted to beat up Tyson Walter, the left tackle at Ohio State.
Because
Andre Wadsworth looked like he was taking the beach at Normandy.
Those guys had a day.
Yeah, Matt Keller, remember him trying to block Andre Wadsworth?
Well, that was a mismatch from the word go. I mean, Ohio State was ninth. Two great losses to Michigan and Penn State, but Florida State was one of the best teams in the country.
They were on the rise to taking on Tennessee for the first BCS championship game. But Ohio State was right there. Just think about it, man. If there had been a 14 playoff back then, we covering Ohio State would have covered two out of three there, 96 and 98.
96 and 98, for sure. They would have been in both of them.
Yeah.
And others after that, too.
Is that all you need for me?
Yeah, I just thought.
Contributor? What do I get for this?
I knew you had a relationship.
Do I get a parting gift?
We'll get you a beer tonight.
Well, I knew you had a relationship with Joe Germain from the years.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wondered if you had.
Nothing not to like about Joe Germain.
Oh, my God.
I even told Devin Brown a story about Joe one time was standing out there in the field. He would come in and turn on the lights in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, the way the legend has
it. Kind of like what Marvin does, yeah.
Exactly. And just throw footballs.
Yeah.
Because I firmly believe that most routes Joe could have thrown blindfolded because he knew exactly where he was going.
Until
Andre Wadsworth was knocking him silly.
People ask me, who's your favorite Ohio State athlete of all time? And I'll say, well, you know, guys that you deal with, you know, not necessarily as a fan. I go, Joe Germain, he's up there. Orlando Pace is up there. Eddie George is up there. I mean, all those guys, and that's from my first few years. I was spoiled the first few years I got into this.
Yeah.
Because I was mostly a basketball guy and got into it in the mid-90s full time. And it was,
Oh, yeah. There were some great
guys.
Those
were the glory times.
Great guys have come and gone. They still are, man. Yeah. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is one of the greatest individuals.
Exactly.
Forget about the player I've ever dealt with. I think you agree with me on that.
No doubt. Hey, thanks for stopping
nice
by.
Tim.
Yep.
Thanks, Tim.
Appreciate you taking a minute.
There you go. Two veterans. Two veterans.
Well, it couldn't hurt.
Two veterans of the Ohio State beat right there. We're going to wrap this up. We're going to get back to work. We've got to finish our work before we have our media party tonight where we're going to make Steve get back on the alcohol horse.
Duh.
I don't need it, that's for sure. No, neither of us need it. We both got a little – it was a little wild last night. Nothing too crazy, just – a lot of drinks between people on the beat. I don't know if there's a thought that this Ohio State beat, because we compete for viewership and whatnot, but we all get along pretty well when we're on these trips. And last night was an example of that, with the good group of us hanging out here in the hospitality suite and then going over to the bar across the street. So thank you guys for tuning in for another episode of the Bucknuts Happy Hour. Steve, thanks for hanging with me for this full show. We've got more stuff up on the site. Steve is working on getting the video from the head coaching press conference as we were recording this, so that'll be up there soon. And there'll be plenty more. If you haven't caught a lot of our stuff, you know, Dave Biddle's been contributing from back home as well. So there's plenty on Bucknuts, and there will be plenty of more before the game, after the game, and as we head into the offseason. So thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Bucknuts Happy Hour. Patrick Murphy, Steve Hellhagen with Bucknuts and 24/7 Sports. Cheers.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.